Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks. I'm Brett. I host the darn thing. And this is a show that I originally recorded back at the very beginning of January. And I decided not to release it because as I was reviewing it, first of all, it was a little bit incomplete. And then I thought a lot of the subject matter seemed kind of obvious. But then some things happened. I started thinking about it a little more and I figured I'd put it here for those who might be interested. So first thing, it is discussed in the upcoming installment of the Self-Esteem series with Wes, part 5, Living Purposefully. We talk about this book that I'm going to be reviewing today, The First 20 Hours by Josh Kaufman. And then I was talking about it with somebody else, and they said, oh, if you've recorded some thoughts on that, I would love to hear them. I've been thinking about reading that book. And, you know, maybe there's some fresh ideas and perspectives here. So I thought I would share it. There's kind of a long lead-in where I go over some of the basics and an introduction. And that'll be enough time to decide whether you want to invest another, 25 minutes or so in hearing the rest. So that's it. Thanks. Here you go. Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. And in today's short presentation, I want to share with you some of the findings of a little research project that I have undertaken in the past few days here. And it started when I came across an article on Forbes called It Takes 20 Hours, Not 10,000 Hours to Learn a Skill. And it's written by Dan Schwabel. And it's about an author named Josh Kaufman, who developed a method that he explicates in a book called The First 20 Hours, How to Learn Anything Fast. That sounded a little gimmicky, but I have to say I was intrigued because I said 20 hours, that's way less than 10,000 hours. I even find that a little bit motivating, and I wanted to learn more. And fortunately, there were numerous resources available online. Kaufman gave a TED Talk. I found him to be very entertaining. And if you're unfamiliar, I mean, let's start with this 10,000-hour thing. This actually originated in a book that I think was written maybe 5 or 6 years ago by Malcolm Gladwell, and it was called Outliers, The Story of Success. And in the book, Gladwell looks at the factors that contribute to extraordinarily high levels of achievement, right? So we're talking like Beatles, Tiger Woods. Most of us aren't interested in learning something new to be the Tiger Woods of it. And this became a thing since Outliers that I've heard people say to each other, like, oh, do you know it takes 10,000 hours to become really good at something? And the other person says, oh, phew, I was about to start wasting my time, but since I will never be able to devote 10,000 hours to anything, I won't try at all. That happens. And, there's a lot of factors that, and a lot of obstacles that stop us from learning new things. So it doesn't take 10,000 hours to be good at something. It doesn't take 10,000 hours to enjoy something. According to Gladwell, it takes 10,000 hours to become the Beatles at something, and that's not what a lot of us are trying to do. I mentioned Tiger Woods. Let's talk about golf a little bit. I played golf. I started playing golf when I was like 16, and it ain't like riding a bike. So if you're totally unfamiliar with the sport, there's, a par for the course. Most golf courses are between 70 and 72, and that is the number of strokes that it should take to finish 18 holes. So you should get a 3 on this hole, you should get a 4 on this hole, a 4 on this hole, a 5 on this hole. And if you shoot par, it's usually 70 or 72. That's a 0 handicap. Best I ever was, with lots of practice, I got down to about 12. And when you're a 12 handicap, you are better than 99% of people on that course. Right? But you're still leagues and leagues and leagues away from somebody like Tiger Woods. You're like, well, what's the difference? It's like Tiger Woods might be, I don't know, a -3 handicap, meaning that he finishes under par. That last stretch, right? So getting from like maybe a 17 handicap to a 10 handicap is nothing like getting from a 10 to a 3. Because that is you pushing into the elite world of golfers, the 1% of the 1%. Are these percentages kind of arbitrary, Brett? Yes. You get the idea. But I was never, when I was that good at golf, I never said, oh, shit, I couldn't beat Tiger Woods today. It didn't even cross my mind. I was out there for my own enjoyment. This is why we do things. Is it more fun to be better at something? Of course. Nobody likes existing in a state of darkness and incompetence and confusion. But I would have fun playing golf no matter what. I was recently out. I went to the driving range with Tony Myers. I almost committed involuntary manslaughter, almost hitting a man with a golf ball. I just missed him. The man was standing in a place where no competent person's ball should have gone. But I still had a good day. And if that was my first time at the driving range, I might have said, well, geez, I almost killed a man today. I shouldn't do this. But when that had the end of the day, I hit a bunch of terrible shots. My hands were all blistered because I hadn't done it in like 2 or 3 years. But I could remember successes that I had had in the past. And that motivated me to keep hitting balls. Because I remember going up to a par 3, addressing the ball, hitting it on the green, 3 feet from the pin, getting a 2 on the hole. So I'm not going to be discouraged by one day because I've seen success in that thing. And I think this is kind of what Kaufman is trying to get at in this book, The First 20 Hours, right? 20 hours, in Kaufman's estimation anyway, is this magic number for investment in a new skill. 20 hours is enough time to start experiencing success, to start achieving a level of competence, compared at least to the initial level of competence, that will serve as a motivator to keep going and set goals. But 20 hours, it's about 40 minutes a day for a month, is a small enough amount of time, especially if you consider like, hey, 2 practice sessions a day of 20 minutes for 1 month, I'll try something out, that most people won't say, ugh, you know, 20 is a very friendly number as far as the hours you need to invest in something versus 10,000 anyway. I mean, 10,000 hours, that's doing something as your full-time job, 40 hours a week for 5 years, which obviously most people can't do with anything. So the more I started to look into this first 20 hours, how to learn anything fast method, obviously it gets me thinking about education, or what most people understand as education in this country. And so little of that experience, whether talking about secondary school or higher education, translates into a conversation we have with ourselves where we say, this piece of knowledge helps me perform this action or this set of actions. So there's a lot of fat in these schooling institutions. And if you look at the institutions that have been tasked with running education, they're not good at minimizing waste. They're not good at efficiency. And I feel like, just from trying to be mindful of some of my own research and learning habits, that the bad habits of these institutions in which I spent so much, I mean, I'm talking 20,000 hours between high school and college, the bad practices of those institutions translate to some bad practices that I still have. And I'll give you an example. I collect too much stuff. So remember how we learn things in school. The subject is history. We're going to throw everything at you but the truth, right? Lots of dates, lots of names, lots of vocabulary words, lots of blanks to fill out. And I also, very early in my career, when I was a student teacher, had to spend a lot of time looking at state standards. Everything needs to be covered. And I find myself doing research for some things and getting overwhelmed very, very quickly. And maybe you've had this experience where you're just downloading everything you can find, saving a bunch of things to an internet favorites folder, copying and pasting. And you know, you get to a point where you look and you say, oh, I've collected too much stuff. I'm overwhelmed. This happens to me a lot with video production. Now, being mindful of what we're collecting is, or being more mindful of what we're collecting, I should say, is a function of increasing competence with the getting things done method, and really the trivia method too, that we can start being judicious about what we collect. So when I first got Evernote, I was like, I can collect everything that happens. Every single thing that comes into my consciousness can be collected and sorted and organized later. Well, that organized later part is really kind of a stick in the spokes sometimes. And once you do collect everything that comes in front of you, you know, I mean, I guess it's different for everybody. We have different jobs. We have different activities. We have different lifestyles. What are we collecting? After a couple months, I can look at what I've collected and say, wow, you know, there's a lot of fat here. I'm kind of being like a university or a secondary school. I'm taking in more than I need, more than I can translate into practical use. So the benefit of Kaufman's method is it's encouraging you to think more upfront and then streamline the rest of the process.
You talk about the 10,000-hour rule, that it's not just a matter of, well, this person's a genius, this person has an amazing ability. It is actual practice and hard work.
You know, so a group of really brilliant psychologists in the field of expertise research have sat down and tried to figure out, how long do you have to work at something before you become really good, right? And the answer seems to be, it's an extraordinarily consistent answer in an incredible number of fields, and that is, you need to have practiced, to have apprenticed for 10,000 hours before you get good. So every great classical composer, without exception, composes for at least 10 years before they write their masterwork.
Mozart, 10.
Mozart is composing at 11, but he's composing garbage at 11. I mean, he doesn't produce something great until he's 22 or 23. Mm. Concerto number 9, I think, 271. If I asked you, how long did it take you when you were doing this job before you felt comfortable and good at what you were doing?
10 years at least.
10 years. Yeah. Same with me. I mean, it's an incredibly consistent finding, and it's really important because it says that we are far too impatient with people when we assess whether someone has got what it takes to do a certain job. We always want to make that assessment after 6 months or a year, and that's ridiculous. You know, the kinds of jobs we have people do today are sufficiently complex that they require a long time to reach mastery. And what we should be doing is setting up institutions and structures that allow people to spend the time and effort to reach mastery, not judging them prematurely.
What is the takeaway? What's the lesson for people who want to be more successful? I mean, what is, in some ways, it's good news that they don't have to be geniuses.
Yeah, although I've been, you know, I'm very anxious that this book not be seen as a self-help book, but be seen as a kind of community help book. Because lots of the things, what I really want people to do is start thinking about how can we as a society build institutions that provide opportunities to work hard.
It's a fascinating book, Outliers. Malcolm, thanks.
Thank you very much.
So let's start here. This 10,000-hour rule. Gladwell wrote that book in 2007, and he is tracing the success stories of people throughout the 20th century, right? So let's pick an example from the book, The Beatles. So let's say I'm John Lennon, and I'm 15, and there's some new music-making skill that I want to learn and develop. Well, if I'm John Lennon and I'm 15, it's 1955, and there are numerous obstacles to the obtaining of new knowledge. There are a lot of inconveniences, time-consuming pursuits that simply do not exist for us today. And that's encouraging. Maybe that 10,000 hours, as technology improves, goes down to 5, goes down to 4, goes down to 3. Soon, before you know it, it's only 1 year of solid full-time work to develop mastery in a skill. Because I can become competent in something, unless it requires a lot of, you know, finite movements and muscle memory, you know, that can only be achieved through hours of practice. You know, I can become competent in a new knowledge area in a couple of hours. Now, here's the other thing. Perhaps this seems lazy. As I explain it in more detail, you're going to realize that it's not, right? It's a methodology about building momentum, not doing something for 20 hours and saying, good enough. Because if you're motivated, if you're passionate about some new pursuit, that never happens. You never just get the basic survival set of skills and say, oh, yeah, this is what I wanted. If that's what you're doing, that means you're unmotivated. That means you don't have a passion for that. And 20 hours is a pretty minimal stake of your time to invest. You know what I mean? Well, a lot of us are parents. Excuse me, a lot of you are parents. And one of the things that Kaufman mentions at the beginning of his TED Talk is when he had his first child, only one child, he said, I guess I will never have free time again. I've seen through, you know, watching my siblings what that looks like, what that feeling looks like, how precious sometimes those 15 minutes to yourself can be.
But that doesn't mean that the desire to learn, just because there's less free time available for some of us, whether it's family or work or whatever, that the desire to learn dissipates. We did a series of shows on the Trivium, and what we were going through in the Trivium shows is really about a methodology for eventually achieving mastery in a skill or a knowledge area. And what we're talking about here, even though this method has some compatibility in some parts with the Trivium method, it's different, and it's for something different. And I think that that's an important thing to recognize. Kaufman's method seems to be more oriented towards people who want to develop, I know I keep using the word competency, for something that, you know, they want to know the basics of, initially anyway, or they want to develop as a hobby. You're not going to be a filmmaker in 20 hours, but you are going to have a level of proficiency with that that allows you to reassess and set new goals. So I think there's a preliminary step here, and I've heard Kaufman mention this idea, but it's not included in the four main steps of his process. And that preliminary step would be deciding what you want, you know, kind of thinking about why you're excited about this new pursuit and establishing a target performance level. So if you're dreaming big, like say you're a young person and you're thinking about something that you know, you want to be doing for the rest of your life as a profession, as a trade, then you're probably looking more at the Trivium method, right? But if you're just, you know, my age and you're talking about developing a new hobby, you know, I think what Kaufman has provided is worth looking into. So let's take an example, all right, of this preliminary step. I say, I want to be a photographer. Well, that's vague, right? So what does success look like compared to where I am now? What do I want to do? And I decide some things that, you know, at the end of 20 hours, I would want to be able to do this, this, and this. So I'm kind of, I'm not learning the global skill. I'm learning a few things that are going to help me build momentum to maybe when I reach that 20-hour checkpoint, I'm going to reassess and say, okay, now with this as a foundation, here's the new things that I want to add to this. Now, this is kind of dangerous, too. So people should be careful, and people should really do this preliminary step carefully and think about what they want. Another thing that I think would be extremely beneficial at this point is to talk to somebody who has the skill and operates at or above the level you at least initially hope to obtain. How did they do it? A question that I would include is, what mistakes did you make, you know, in the whole learning process? I'll use the example of guitar playing. There are some fundamentals that you really want to have in place if you're going to try something new, especially if it requires a lot of muscle memory. You don't want to devote 20 hours, 30 hours to reinforcing and having your muscles remember bad habits. So there are some fundamentals in something like guitar playing. You know, because dexterity and muscle memory are such a part of what you're doing, you don't want to be practicing with bad habits. And that has a lot to do with finger positioning. So like when I started learning to play the guitar years and years ago, I was told, well, geez, you know, Brett, all you need to know is D, C, and G, and you can play like 1,000 songs. So I learned those three chords with the most comfortable finger positioning for a novice, and practiced with bad habits. So I would sit in my room, you know, on the corner of my bed and say, "Here's Every Rose Has Its Thorn by Poison," and I would play it, right? Maybe mumble some singing along with it. But I was playing the chords and moving my fingers in a way that was easy for a novice to do. And this little pinky that I have at the end of my hand wasn't involved in the action. And when you get to a point with playing the guitar and you want to be able to play more chords beyond just, you know, majors and minors, and you want to learn bar chords, that pinky needs to be involved, and you have to have control over it. So I spent a lot of time practicing the guitar, thinking I was getting ready to start a band, you know, because I know D, C, G. Ooh, I know A. You know, I can do an A, E, G, D kind of thing. But the pinky is just dangling, and it's not being trained like the other fingers are. So if you just say, the only thing I want out of the guitar or some other instrument that this would apply to is to be able to do this basic, simple stuff, great. You know, you can now go and select the things that you want to know and do them. And deciding whether you're looking for that basic knowledge of something or mastery of something, I really think will dictate what approach you should use. So if it's basic, you know, Kaufman's book that is kind of gimmicky, go for it. Now let's add to that the story of another musical pursuit at which I failed, the drums. Well, this goes back much earlier, and this skill was learned in an entirely different way. When I was about 13 or 14, so we're talking the early 90s, the only way that I could learn the drums, that I knew of anyway, you know, I'm not saying there that self-teaching didn't exist before the internet, but here I am, a middle schooler, maybe early high schooler, and I say, gosh, I want to learn those drums. So I go down to the music store, Exeter Music, and they have two closets that they do instrument lessons in. It's enough room for you and an instructor to sit. So it seemed like months went by, and I just sat in this closet with this guy named Peter, and we had a drum pad. And it's just a thump, thump. It doesn't even sound like a drum. It's not awesome at all. Like the stuff I was seeing on MTV, this scene was nothing like that, you know, where Tommy Lee is rocking out and the one-armed guy from Def Leppard. I had two arms and I'm just sitting in a closet hitting a pad. So it was discouraging. But what Peter, the teacher, wanted me to have as a foundation was those basic movements, right? So it would start just right hand, quarter notes, one, two, three, four, left hand. And he would only let me hold the left stick between two of my fingers because he wanted those fingers to build strength. And this was like the old, you know, Gene Kupa style of drumming where you're kind of flipping your wrist on the left side. And then, you know, holding the drumsticks in the same way in both hands, that comes along much later when you actually get on a set. But that was like way into the distant future. And then we would do eighth notes, you know, one and two and three and four and. And then we would do 16th notes. And now, this is over a month. One E and a two E and a three E and a four E. This was excruciating. I said, where are the drums? Where's the cymbals? You know? But it was happening at a time I couldn't go to a website or a YouTube playlist that said, yeah, first you learn this, and this part kind of sucks, but after you learn this, you get to do this, you know? And then you can see the person putting those skills to use, you know? And Peter, the teacher, said, you know, this is once you learn how to do this, you'll do this. But I couldn't see anybody doing it.
Maybe some of you are saying, well, Brett, then you're an idiot. Because millions of people learned how to play instruments before the internet. Okay, touche. You know, imaginary overcritical listeners. But I think it's fair to say that millions and millions more than most likely quit. Now, I could see, and I can add to that, the frustration of being able to see what it looked like to be a master of this activity by going home after school and watching MTV, which for you younger folks at this time that I'm talking about, MTV was conducting what turned out to be a short-lived experiment where you could watch videos of bands you like playing their songs.
And I could contrast that with 13-year-old me sitting in a closet hitting a pad. And that was frustrating. So I just felt like it was this dead-end, monotonous pursuit. And contrast this with the story that I was telling before, where I didn't do the fundamentals approach. I went on the internet, maybe when I started playing the guitar, maybe it was like 2003. I went on the internet, and I said, show me how to do chords. And I said, ooh, I know chords. I better start memorizing these bad habits. There's something in between. So the first thing that Kaufman suggests, his first actual step in the 20-hour process, is deconstructing the skill. And we've talked about this now a little bit already, but it's identifying the components of a global skill. So in guitar playing, you know, learning chords, and that has several stages, scales, picking, finger positioning, holding the guitar, all of those things are sub-skills of a global skill. And talents are collections of smaller skill. Photography is not a skill. It's a collection of specific, finite areas of knowledge. So now I jump back to the preliminary step. And I say, you know, at the end of 20 hours, I want to be perfectly proficient in shooting myself on video. All right, so this is a place where the 20-hour rule applies. So using the DSLR camera that I have, but that means there's all kinds of stuff about photography that I don't have to learn. Right? There's all kinds of things about this camera that I don't have to learn. But one thing that I do still feel like I want to know after investing so much time in studying the trivia method is I want to know what everything in that camera can do so I can make a decision as to whether or not it will be useful in my specific pursuit. But I'm no longer overwhelmed by this huge umbrella skill called photography or videography. I have a specific function that I want this camera and my knowledge combined with this camera to output for me. And some people might, you know, hear me say that and say, Brett, you're selling yourself short. You should be a master. Well, once I have that foundational level of skill that maybe takes 20 hours to develop, maybe takes less. Actually, what I'm talking about, that should be relatively simple, you know. I'm sitting at my desk right now. I'm looking at some lights I'm getting ready to set up and start messing around with all that. Well, then maybe it moves into using a DSLR camera to do more cinematic look types of shoots. Also a goal, but a separate goal. So that's what deconstructing the skill is all about, right? It's not guitar playing. It's not photography. It is with a specific end in mind. The second step that Kaufman lays out is research and self-correction. So this goes back to what I was talking about in the opening monologue of the show, where we have this bad habit of over-collection. You know, and maybe we picked this up in school. Maybe this is just, you know, the consequence of never really being taught how to do research on the internet. I don't know. It could be different for all of us. Maybe it's just a problem for me. But what he says is don't overwhelm yourself in this initial stage. You know, pick 3 to 5 resources. Don't overload. Be smart about your choices. And that's very important. This goes back to what I was talking about, you know, improving the critical thinking process, the new knowledge acquisition process, or even the getting things done process, being smart about the choice of what to collect. You know, and get out of research. And get into practicing, especially if it's a skill that requires, you know, muscle memory or improved dexterity. Start doing as soon as you can. So what he's saying is that the reference materials should only really be used to learn enough that you know when you're making mistakes and you can correct yourself. And it also might require a little bit of tweaking, depending on whether you're trying to develop specifically a cognitive skill or improve some kind of motor skill, as I mentioned before. So here, you're breaking down a larger skill into its components and deciding what's most important to pursue first. Now, I don't know Kaufman's whole story. Maybe he is completely unaware of the Trivium method of learning. I mean, after all, where would he have ever heard about it? But when you're weighing, at the very least, these two options of learning something, because he gives the example of learning a language, and I totally disagree with him. I'm going to put lukewarm into the title. This is a lukewarm review of the first 20 hours for sure, because I disagree. This is not how I would want to learn a language that I would actually be able to speak, right? If the language is Spanish, and I want to go to a Spanish-speaking country and talk to the people there like unfrozen caveman tourist, yeah, maybe his approach where he says, if you want to learn a new language, learn the most common words, and then you'll have, you know, a certain percentage of the text covered. But that's not, I mean, you need to learn about conjugation, and Spanish is a fairly easy language to learn, but I wouldn't recommend doing it in just a vocabulary-based way. Right? You want to learn the rules of the language, I would say. People, you know, I've always been like stunned when people say they learn a foreign language from watching TV in another language. You know, maybe I'm just limited, but I have no idea how that works. Send me an email if you know how that works. So yeah, I mean, you know, if you want a functional understanding of a language, which is what a lot of Americans have of English, you know, they can read enough to be controlled. Great. Go and use this approach in another country. You can find the train station and maybe you can get yourself an empanada. It's almost dinner time here. But yeah, I think that that's more applicable to certain skills. I think language is a bad example. The next one, and I think this is a very, very important behavior to start practicing. Remove the barriers to learning or to practice, right? So this is really about getting the environment right, you know? I always tell people when they say, oh, these kids, look at them, they're going nuts. Well, you shouldn't try to control them in a reactive way. You should try to set up an environment conducive to, you know, education and social behavior ahead of time. And I had great success with this, with kids who were bigger than me and not my own. And dare I use, if I can take some language out of the DSM-4, oppositional defiance. But by just having the right environmental conditions defined, I found it eliminated a lot of problems. Well, we can do it with ourselves. I want to read more. You heard, I picked up the guitar and played it a little bit. I'm friggin' awful at it. I want to get better at it. I got 40 minutes a day. So what I realized is I need to have set time where I get up from my desk, you know, and I can go and read, or I can do the guitar, and I have it out of the case. For months, it was in a storage unit. That's creating the right environment. That's the removing the barriers to learning. That's his third official step. And the last one is simple, and it's eponymous. You know, practice at least 20 hours. And after you commit and you test this, you can see if it's an open loop that you can just delete without any remorse, or if it's something that at that point you've built enough momentum to pursue. So if any of you out there, you know, you've been looking at that sewing kit or that ukulele in the corner, and you just don't think you have the 10,000 hours, or you don't have, you know, the time or the energy to go through the trivium process, I recommend taking a look at this. It's certainly not a way to learn everything. I don't even know if I could say it's a great way to learn most things. But it might be just the kick some of us need to get started with a new hobby. And it's a different way of thinking about it. It's not very intimidating. And I might try it out with the guitar and let you know how it goes. So I hope some of this was helpful. More stuff is coming soon. Okay, thanks everybody. Have a great weekend.